Hey, this episode of Juan Epstein is brought to you by our friends at Bevel. GetBevel.com. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this edition of Juan Epstein is brought to you by our friends at SeatGeek. Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, and welcome. Oh, and you know what I just realized? I'm going to try to call Cypher Sounds. In for Cypher Sounds today is the great Quarterman. You may remember him from the No ID episode.
I was there.
Was that correct?
I was there. Yeah.
You were there in another one too, but you co-hosted that one.
Daddy-O was supposed to be at the other one. And then it just became me, you, and Sife.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And the girls. I don't remember what girls were there.
But there's always an array of women. Before we get to our guest today, which I'm very excited about, let's see if Cypher Sounds answers the phone in London. Cypher is with Dave Chappelle for a
name drop.
2-3 week run. Well, everyone's been kind of listening to Juan Epstein, hearing that he's been reconnecting with Chappelle. Mm-hmm. Oh. Sife?
Hello?
Hey, Sife, it's Rosenberg.
I know, your name popped up on the phone.
You sound so clear, but you're all the way in London town, yeah?
I'm in London, yeah?
I am here with Quartermain, who's filling in for you.
Sife.
Okay.
You remember him?
I do.
He said hi, but you couldn't hear him. It was as far away.
I heard him.
Okay.
I just didn't want to respond to
him. Okay, got it.
He sounded like he's in the bathroom.
Because he's coming for your spot. And then our guest today, Sife, is we have DJ EFN.
See, I thought EFN was going to be filling in.
Ah, EFN's the guest. Quartermain's filling in. How do you like them apples?
That's kind of crazy.
I know. Now, Sife, do you have a history with EFN?
Like, what do you mean? Like, we used to fuck the same bitches or something?
I was going to ask you next. Did you guys ever fuck the same bitch?
No, I don't think so.
But have you known him?
No, we didn't.
EFN, I once was in Miami with Little Kim, and there was a chubby girl that worked the valet that I gave the Sheboygan to.
Okay.
That was my cousin.
Do you know her?
I did that to my cousin, man.
All right, Sife, real quick, before we start up, do tell us, how is the Chappelle thing going in London?
It is fucking amazing, yo. Mm.
Why is it so good?
Because the thing is, Chappelle doesn't really have a full act together. He's like putting it together night by night on stage. So the first run of the shows were in New York, and I watched him start these ideas of jokes. And then I saw him 3 times in New York, get the gist of it. And you just see it. You watch it grow like a plant every night.
Yeah, God.
And then we come out here and he's just like adding different twists to it because he's in London. But he's just like, he's putting it all together on stage and he just wants to do it in front of an audience. It's fucking crazy, man.
And are there shows every night or do you just have days where y'all have nothing to do?
No, well, the day we got here, Monday, we didn't have anything to do. We were just chilling. But from now on, the rest of the week, every night.
And then what? And then aren't you there for longer than that?
Then we're going to some big fight on Saturday.
Oh, you're going to O2 Arena? You're going to see Gennady Golovkin?
Is that Triple G?
Yes.
And Kel something?
Yes, Kel Brook. You're going to see Triple G versus...
Kel Brook.
You're going to that fight?
Yeah.
But you don't know dick about boxing.
I know that there's some scantily clad bitches up in there.
That's for sure.
Championship.
There would definitely be some bitches up in that joint. Wow. Have you talked to Chappelle about doing Juan Epp? How's that going?
That'd be crazy.
I have. He's very interested. And actually, Quali came out with us last night.
Okay.
And Quali was explaining how much Chappelle should do Take It Personal and Juan Epp. And
Drink Champs.
No, do not promote Drink Champs. You know our goal is to shut down Drink Champs. I know it's an odd approach to have him as a guest on the show, but I'm also trying to shut him down. And so what did he say? Yeah. What did Chappelle say when you said this?
He's like, let's drink some tequila.
No, you know what? He should do Drink Champs.
Yeah. He's already ready for Drink Champs.
That's for sure. Fine. Believe me, Chappelle's always ready for Drink Champs. But he's doing good. Chappelle's doing well. He seems in good spirits, and you're out there having a good time. Have you seen anyone famous besides Talib Kweli? And gigs.
I saw gigs. Nah, there was some MMA fighter at the show yesterday, but I don't know his name.
Yo, I gotta link you up with my dude Marvin, my good buddy out there.
Who's Marvin?
Marvin's like my promoter dude out there. He's not really a full time promoter, but he's the guy who got me.
He was like our tour guy.
Yeah, he's just my homie now. But you gotta meet him. Good dude. A good London bloke. Yeah. Just a good bloke.
Tell him to come by the shows.
Mm. All right, I'm gonna link you up with him.
Yeah.
I mean, you, and you're also a notorious friend. You're a notorious friend stealer, so he'll become like your best friend.
I don't steal friends.
Oh,
do
yeah.
I?
Big friend stealer.
Sounds like Nori.
Who'd I steal?
Everybody. You're a big friend stealer. It's not a person. Although, no, Sife, most of your friend stealing would come if I introduced you to Marvin and he turned out to be a hot bitch.
Oh, man. I don't know what you're referring to right now.
I'm just kidding. Kind of. Anyway, Sife, we love you. Have fun in London. And if I do more 1EPs, I'll check in with you. When are you coming
Why
back?
Why are you cutting me off? Mm. Just leave me on.
You want to stay?
Yeah, I'm in my room.
Oh, yeah. All right.
More to marry.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, from the Drink Champs podcast and just Miami hip hop history.
Crazy hood.
We have DJ EFN in the building today.
Thank
How
you
are you,
for
man?
Having me, guys. Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
No, that's very kind of you. First of all,
I can't hear his mic.
Hold on. See, this is why I don't want to have you. Hold on, Sife. I'm putting you closer.
Patch me in.
All right. Try talking now, EFN.
You hear me now, Sife?
Yeah, there we go. That's right, my boy, my Cuban brother.
I can bring up the volume. I'm Cuban.
First of all, congratulations on the success of Drink Champs.
Appreciate it.
It's doing very well. It has become one of the most talked about hip hop podcasts for sure. I think it's the most talked about one in a long time. Right. But the thing that I found interesting about you is that you came along into a lot of people's world as, you know, this host of Drink Champs, mm-hmm. but you've been like an underground DJ, yeah. Miami staple mm-hmm. for a very long time.
Definitely. You could probably say I was like the Tony Toucher, the Clue of Miami.
Really?
Yeah, so, I was a mixtape dude.
You were
So
Cali
would
have been the
mix
radio
those
dude.
Two.
What? You would not mix what? Tony Touch and
well,
Clue?
Well, no, yeah, but I'm just saying.
What the fuck mixes Tony Touch and Clue together?
The notoriety of their mixtapes.
Okay, there you go.
I'm not talking about the DJing of it. I'm just saying the notoriety of their mixtapes.
And like that Tony Touch was...
For the city.
Right, and Tony Touch was on like the underground side freestyle mixtape thing, and right. Clue had the hot commercial,
right.
but still...
And I tried to mix those two things, having exclusives, and I was mixing, you know, the tapes. They were mixed.
So where are you from? Are you born in Miami?
Born in Los Angeles, but raised in Miami, Florida.
Cuban.
100%. Yep.
And what age did you go to Miami?
I probably started going around the age of 5. My parents separated around that time, and my dad moved to Miami, and they were back and forth. They were trying to work it out.
You know, Sife's father died when he was very young.
I don't know if that's a joke or not.
No, it's Sife.
An awkward pause.
It's serious. You are Sife?
Yeah. I was just thinking about my dead dad.
Are you all right? Do you want a minute?
No, I'm okay. I'm okay.
All right, we're glad
back.
You're over.
He's back. It's been a long time. It's been a long
Condolences.
Time. Well, no, it was about he died about. Sife, how old are you? You're about he died about 38 years ago. So
yeah,
he's doing all right. Sife's pulling through. Anyway, so at what point? Like, what's happening when you first become aware of music?
Uh-huh.
What's happening around
as
you?
A child?
Yes,
hearing obviously Spanish music in the home.
What was the Spanish music that was popping? That's how you can educate us today a little bit.
Celia Cruz. I mean, just Cuban. Actually, I didn't know. I was a child, so I didn't know who they were playing. It's just the sounds, the congas, and, you know, the percussions. But really where I became aware of music is really through film.
Really?
Yeah. How so?
Just soundtracks, you know, and TV shows as well. And that's what made me, that's what really got me inspired into, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but got me really into just music culture as a whole, like just seeing films and seeing pictures, music and pictures together.
Huh, interesting. You know? What movies are the first ones that really resonate that you think remember?
I mean, think of any. I mean, all the movies from the 80s, you know, any.
You mean like the score of movies?
The scores like or the songs, like the pop songs that were attached to these movies. I'll tell you one. Okay. One of my biggest, the songs that I, one of the songs I really loved was, I think, was it Herbie Hancock? For Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, but you don't mean Axel F.
Yeah.
You mean Axel F, the...
Yeah. I made a pause tape with, that was the whole A side, and I would act like I was Axel running around, you know, the streets.
You had your own theme music.
Yeah. Like, that was everything to me, was music was the theme to our life.
That's a really interesting way of getting into music that you don't hear about every day, that people are associating it with film.
Yeah. I mean, not necessarily film, just visual.
Or visuals.
Life experience. Like, because you see it in a movie, but then now when you live in your life, you can add music to it.
Yeah, of course.
So music, you know, is a bookmark to different things, experiences in your life.
Yeah.
And then seeing the music, like when you would watch a movie that was like a timepiece, like the Kennedy movie or whatever movies that are timepieces, and then they had music from that time period, you associated that music to that time period.
I know. And then the funny thing that can happen is sometimes it can get fucked up in your head because you become familiar with a song from a television show or movie, right, but it's not really of that era at all.
100%.
For example, best example of this, I don't know if anyone in this group will necessarily appreciate it, though you may, is like, for a lot of people, myself included, Tiny Dancer by Elton John is forever the movie Almost Famous. But Almost Famous came out in like 1998.
Right.
And Tiny Dancer, I don't even know what you, I'm guessing 1978?
Well, that's going to
happen. It's about the 70s. Right. So, in your mind, you're like, oh, yeah, I was this age. But that movie was about the 70s.
Right.
So, but that's what I love about it. I mean, one of the things I've been geeking off of recently is, I went to the place last week in LA where I bought my jukebox.
Yeah.
Yo, you have to go there, Sai.
Some sick shit.
Yo, the upstairs. So in the back, he has these jukeboxes. This guy, he restores jukeboxes. He restores soda machines, cigarette machines, old video games. Yeah. He has all that stuff. But then upstairs, he just has old music equipment, beat machines, speakers. Ooh. Oh yeah, Sife, you would definitely
hook me up.
I will. Yes. This place is dope. But yeah, we were talking about. He was saying that I was asking about like the weirdos who he deals with, because when you operate in the nostalgia business, whether it's the video games or the jukeboxes, you meet some interesting people.
Right, for sure.
And he was saying that record weirdos are the biggest of all weirdos to him. He's talking about the most intense ones, the ones who are like, because like record weirdos are all, it's all within reason, right? Like Sife's a record nerd. Daryl, you're a record. We're all record nerds to an extent. Yeah, you were, Daryl. You fell off. We all are or were to an extent. But like I'm the kind of person that, for example, if I see a copy of a record on Discogs and it says very good condition and it's 50 cents, I'll buy it. And as long as I get it, it plays and doesn't skip, and the static isn't overpowering.
Man, I said.
Sorry, Sife?
No, sorry.
What, Sife, what was that?
I'm getting my set together.
It sounded like Supercat.
Man, I said, show me how you get down.
Some UK records. You don't know about these records.
Okay, thank you. No. You gotta get us up on that. But he was just saying, so I don't give a shit about stuff like that, but he was saying the ones who are psychotic about the condition of records are
more than
some
like an audiophile. You wouldn't call them an audiophile?
Yeah, I guess audiophile. Like, yeah, so when
the
record
bitrate junkies?
Yeah, when the record collector meets the like just absolute audiophile.
Right.
And like they won't stop until they get the perfect copy. Like if I have a record, there's a kind of rare record. I consider myself to have it as long as the record will play all the way through. Now, if it has a big skip in the middle, then I might as well not have the record.
Right.
But as long as the record plays and I could be out and play it if I need to, then to me, I'm good. But there are some people that just won't even categorize. Now, let's start there for a second. We'll work around.
They want like sealed records.
Sealed or maybe open, but like barely played.
Nah.
And no marks on it whatsoever.
Plays. That's good. That's what the record's for.
That's how I always felt.
You fucking not play it?
Yeah, like that. That's the thing. But
it's
we're
like not
DJs.
Playing with a toy.
But we're DJs,
right?
As opposed to just straight. Like I'm a record. I consider myself a record collector,
right?
But I'm a DJ. So yes, the records are to be played, not simply to be collected and put away. Yeah. I'm gonna play all of them,
and that's why you buy multiple copies. So if one goes bad, you have a couple other ones,
right? And you try
always
your best.
Bought like three copies.
Yo, what were you, rich EFN? Three copies.
Boston?
Nah, I wasted all my money on that. And we stole a lot of music.
So when did you start DJing?
93. 92, 93. I bought the starter, the DJ starter pack in the Source, in the back of the Source.
Oh, no, you didn't.
I was broke, man. No,
Gemini one?
Yeah, but before that, I was a pause tape DJ. I had two tape decks, and I would do the pitch, and I would make pause tapes.
And you would you blend with the
pitch control? I would blend. And that was my first mixtapes. I mean, I didn't put them out like EFN. I didn't even have the name yet. I think my first name was E-Funk or Funk E. I straddled both those names. And then I got my first turntables. I still wasn't ready until I got my techniques. And then when I got my techniques.
Well, no, let's not skip over the set, though.
Yeah. Okay.
What turntables did you have first?
Yeah,
the Gemini.
So what came in the Gemini set?
You mean music?
In the back of the Source. No, what came in the DJ pack?
It was a basic mixer. I forget what brand it was. And then it was the Gemini turntables, headphones.
It was probably a Gemini mixer.
Yeah, it probably was.
It was that shit.
With the sampler?
Yes.
The little.
Yes. I love it. It was a cheat. That was a cheat, though.
And I still have one of those in the studio.
I might still have mine somewhere. I have my Vestex still.
Oh, I stay with my Vestex. But was it the Gemini that had the shitty transformer switches?
Yeah,
too?
Horrible. Yeah. Horrible.
Yeah, let me tell you, Judson had that. And my boy Judd, he wore out those transformer switches and like if you used it for like a day.
Yeah, if you went hard for a day,
it was over.
All static eating crazy.
It's static, it's over.
Yeah.
So you started with that and they were nasty, I'm sure. Did you realize right away like these turntables kind of suck, or you didn't know any better? We're like you were psyched about it.
I knew immediately they sucked.
You could tell right away.
But I was psyched. Like for me, it was just to have two turntables and then he have a full crate. That was the world to me. I had three records to start with. So to finish that crate off, that was in heaven.
Do you remember
what?
Go ahead.
Yeah, like what you bought records to fill the crate.
That's how I bought whatever.
So what was the early stuff that you were buying in the crate?
My first hip hop record was Self Destruction.
Okay,
and I love that record because it had all the lyrics on the back, and I knew that song, you know, front to back. Yeah.
So we just had D-Nice like whatever
that's one of my a month ago.
Yeah, I was like, that's a great production to have in your hat.
Who are you watching at this time? Who's influencing you?
Artist wise,
DJ wise,
DJ wise, who's mentoring?
No, that's what sucked for me. I knew no DJs.
Me too.
And yeah, I was hating life. So I was buying those videotapes that the X-Men put out,
mm-hmm.
and the Scratch Pickles, and just you know, you had to buy videotapes.
Yeah,
we couldn't go online.
Battle.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching, and that's how I started to figure. Oh, I'm gonna flip my turntable
sideways.
That must mean something.
By the way, it's so funny that so many of us had that experience because those guys are so good.
Oh man!
And what their craft was is so different than that of a typical DJ. That the only thing you could really learn was like, okay, wait, I can't learn any of your scratches. These are too good. Most of them.
Right.
What I can learn is Sife. If you could just Sife.
Hello.
Yeah. What are you doing over there?
Nothing.
Okay. But all you could learn was turning the turntable sideways. Oh, they don't have, because I was so stupid. I've said this before on the podcast that I didn't realize you took the rubber platters off before put the slip mats on.
That was one of the first things I learned.
So you're like, I was like, why don't these
and
records?
Cut the wax, the paper, and put it on
that's
the
exactly
on the plate.
That's exactly what I used for it. Yeah.
Yep. And those were in the videos. You could see like all that stuff. But like, it's not like I could do the Spider-Man battle. You know what I'm saying?
Nah.
Like,
those guys did magic, man. Like that's, you can't compare yourselves to those guys.
But it's funny, but that's what we had to watch.
No,
whereas now on YouTube, you could literally just be like, I want to see any kind of DJ do a full set. And you could get to watch everything they do.
Yep.
You could really learn like, oh, this is how they cue. This is how they mark a record. Yep. This is how many times you should bring it back. Like, you could watch all of it. Back then, all you could do was listen to the radio. Do you remember? I remember as a kid when I was listening to the DJs double up songs, I didn't understand what that was. Like, I didn't know it was two copies of a record with one playing slightly ahead of it.
I can't remember when I figured that out, but.
And sometimes when they would, another thing, when they would play instrumental and go to the vocal version, I didn't know that's what they were doing. I thought it was the instrumental, and then they were playing the acapella over the instrument. Like, I just, little stuff I didn't understand. Sife, you know what I mean?
My stepfather is the one who gave me my first mixer and other turntable. I had one, he gave me another one. And I would listen to, like, Kid Capri going back and forth with doubles, not cutting it, just, like, going, like, left to right, fader to fader. And I was asking my stepfather, like, what is that? He's like, he must have an echo machine.
Because he didn't know either at all.
He didn't know.
What happened to your stepfather?
What did you say? I'm like, I hope he didn't die.
Well, I don't remember. I never hear him. He that's such a random appearance that he made on the podcast.
It was quick. It was in and out.
Oh yeah, he was gone.
dropped off a turntable.
He gave you the equipment and he left.
Oh, that little dun.
Yeah, but then he took it. They took it away from me. That's when I went and got a job and started buying my own equipment.
Oh, I forgot they took it. Why'd they take it away again?
Because I never left my room. I was in there for hours just fucking chopping shit up.
All right, so you get the shitty Gemini turntables.
Right.
You build your little crate. How old are you now, like 14?
No. I'm like 16.
Okay, 16.
Yeah.
And where does this go? Where does this DJing habit go? Because obviously at first you suck. You're trying to figure out what to do.
Well, this is the thing. Like I said, I wanted to do something to music at this point. Just backtrack a little bit. And then I realized that hip-hop is where I want to, like, what I want to be a part of. NWA was what ushered that for me.
Why? What do you think resonated?
Before that, if I had a tape, like, that I would make myself, just a regular tape with different music, it would have everything from Metallica to Jon Bon Jovi to the Beastie Boys to LL Cool J to just a variety, Dougie Fresh, whatever. It was, but it was eclectic, all over the place. The I don't know if you ever heard of the Butthole Surfers. Like, I was a skater too, so I had thrash music, all this stuff. But it wasn't until NWA that I really felt like I felt like a like an energy come from hip hop that you could just feel it. Like you could feel anger, you could just feel something there. And I was just like, this is crazy. And then going back to the idea of you know, putting music with like, you know, visuals or your life or experiences, I felt that hip hop was in such as baby stages, early stages, that this is the music of my generation and I want to get involved. And then even more so in my city, it's even more infant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know it was already established in New York and LA and other cities, but in Miami, I was like, okay, I can get involved. And I can, at first as a fan, we would go to every single hip hop show. I was the first time Wu-Tang ever came to Miami. I was there. First time Biggie came, I was there. First time anybody went, you know, we were there. And then now I can get involved. And then I was like, I don't rhyme. I don't have any of this. And then I was like, I can get two turntables and you know, start something. Putting out these tapes. You know, I saw the
tapes.
Yeah,
I did the same shit.
And that was
because I was like, it's something like, I always thought like, you know, rapping was like a, like some kind of natural or God-given talent.
Right.
But you could practice DJing and get better.
Right. Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
in my case, no. But yes, I do understand.
Yeah.
in theory, if you practice, you can learn.
No.
Yeah.
And it so can you can
learn
voice.
It. Right. You can learn it and you can practice and get the only way you're not better is if you don't put the time in yourself.
Oh, yeah. Definitely had to put in the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how many people like tried DJing and literally had no ear for it, but like literally couldn't figure out having an ear for it. Like they were like, I can't blend. Like I don't hear blending. I don't, you know, there are plenty of people who start and never become great scratchers or whatever, but like you have to at least have, oh, I can blend one song to a next, or I can figure out how to play a party.
Right. You gotta have that knack. The parties is where when I started doing parties, that was a whole different energy, you know, and
yeah.
you gotta be able to get that energy from the crowd and know when to change that record and move those records around. And that's something that, yeah, you don't,
especially back then,
you're not born with that. Or maybe you are born with that. I don't know. It's just, yes. Yeah,
it's funny. Me and Cypher talked about recently about how I was at a party in LA. This is now like a year ago, I guess, at least. Right. And how there are a lot of new kids. And I'm not captain like shit on all the new DJs who use different technology or anything, but how there are a lot of new DJs who play what kids are into these days. You know, like that sort of offbeat new shit, mm-hmm. and can blend it because it's relatively easy to blend for a variety of reasons, and may even understand like having an overall idea of the sound they want, but don't know how to take a party anywhere.
Right.
They just play even continuously.
It's like background music.
No. And when you do that, right.
Yeah. Right.
And there can
be loud. Yeah. Loud background music.
Yeah. Exactly. And when there can be a time and place for that, right? Like if you're doing a corporate site, you know, like those, if you're doing a Nike corporate event and it's just a big party and everyone is there just to talk, that's totally fine. But if you're at a place where the desired goal is a party, like truly people are supposed to dance, the night has to have ebbs and flows. You have to have times where you get people up and people come down. And that's something that like it just seems like is a craft you have to learn on your own.
And be like, I never took the mixtape application to the club or to the party. I looked to Kid Capri. I was the vocal DJ when I was spinning at parties. You know, I was performing with the records. I was getting you into the records, like Kid Capri was doing. That's who I looked at. I was like, oh yeah, that's how you do a party. You know, that's a performance.
That
right
was a guy.
Were you, Daryl? Were you ever big on mic at parties when you DJ'd?
Yeah, because people like my voice, so.
Oh, really? My bad.
Yeah. Early on, but if it's like a regular gig, like it depends how I feel.
Because Syph, you're a big voice guy DJ.
Yeah.
That's
same thing he said, like Kid Capri influenced that, and then dance hall really got me into it.
Miami too, we're big. Like before we had hip hop clubs, we were going to dance hall parties to listen to hip hop.
Yo.
So we all Cuban, Colombians, we could tell you all the reggae records, you know what I'm saying? We were like, we were practically Jamaican.
And, yo, in Miami, those pirate reggae stations.
Yep.
Yeah,
and
course.
I DJ'd
that
pirate,
They talk more than they play the records.
Oh, yeah, the Miami bass and usually those guys, those DJs, like Uncle Al and the ghetto style DJs and all, where Luke
they
and all the people.
They talk the whole show.
That was an art by itself. That's totally different. Like, that's something
Hell
that you have to look at. Those guys, like, you got to give them a different kind of respect because they would play the record really hella fast. And then they would cut it off,
fast.
And they would practically rhyme on the record and say shit that had to do with their hood or whatever.
Yep.
And perfectly on time. And then they would battle that way. And it was crazy. It was crazy.
Hold on. And by the way, now, but you're not talking in this moment. Are you talking about Caribbean DJs? Are you talking about these Miami-based DJs?
Yeah, like the Miami-born and bred DJs from like the inner city, like the ghetto-style DJs.
Okay, so we'll get Uncle Al Cats like that.
Yeah, Sugar Hill DJs, those guys.
Now, so what do you mean? How would they battle in terms of using their vocals on records? Explain that a little
more. So imagine if you had a dude rhyming with the DJ and he's battling the other DJ crew with two MCs. Instead, the DJ is the MC and he's utilizing these records and he's cutting it off at certain points and he's filling in four bars and he's dissing you. Like that, whatever. And it's perfectly on time. And the record's fast because they still want people dancing.
So the record's pitched up to dance.
Because remember, they're going on the BPMs of bass music. So even if they played a song that wasn't bass, they brought up the BPMs to that same BPMs, yeah.
So LL Cool J is Carter as hell, blah, blah, blah. Quartermain can go to hell. Yeah. Taking out records and going back and forth and being part of it.
And it was, and I had the pleasure of seeing Uncle Al battle. We went to this one party and I was just blown back by like, yo, what these dudes are doing is amazing. Like it's an art form by itself. You know, it's not like turntablism as we know it, but it's an art form and it's native to Miami.
Now, could any of those guys, the great Miami DJs, were any of them also really good mixers or scratchers or both? Was there anyone who had the total package or were they mostly personality more than they and selection more than they were DJs?
I think it was mostly personality.
No, what about
it was skill though to it, but it was a different kind of skill.
Okay.
Wait, there was one guy. Remember there was one guy that used to play a shit on Video Music Box. Was it Magic Mike?
Magic Mike is from Orlando, Tampa area. He's crazy, yeah. He's
so Magic, he can cut too.
Yeah, but I don't consider him Miami because he's not from Miami. He's
was Orlando?
Yeah, he's Central Florida. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just like Jam Pony Express is from Central
Florida. He was cutting over bass records, which was crazy
insane,
fast.
Insane, yeah.
Now, Magic Mike, who was one of the bigger names from Florida in the first 20 years of hip-hop, was he popping in Miami too?
Yeah.
But he was known in Miami as an out-of-towner.
Yeah, I mean,
but he got love.
I don't think we even said it in those terms. It's just
he's from Orlando.
He was just known. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't just the people knew he wasn't from Miami.
But it's funny in my mind, the name Magic Mike I always associated, with Miami with bass. I associate with bass.
I think. I mean,
and we tend to lump bass.
Yeah, so he was part of the bass movement, but originally from Orlando.
Yeah, I mean, I think bass, I'm not going to say I'm the expert on bass, but bass, you know, you got to go to Texas, Atlanta, and in Miami, and it has different. Forms of bass, but Miami bass I think originated from Miami, the Miami sound system.
Were you into it? How into that kind of music? Because this is always interesting to me.
Yeah,
because Miami heads, like you said, huge Caribbean influence, right? Huge New York influence, of course.
Yep.
But then there's bass,
right?
And Miami sound. Where did you fall in terms of where your interests were?
So this is the way it kind of like broke down historically. A lot of out of towners brought in basically like mostly up north, northern hip hop. You know, East Coast hip hop per se. And then you had the inner city really big on the bass scene. And those two scenes were parallel to each other. They didn't consider themselves the same thing. So, but as you're growing up in Miami, as we did, you appreciated bass for being like a native music to Miami. But we were hip hop heads trying to create this hip hop identity that was not bass. We wanted lyrics. We wanted the boom bap. We wanted certain kinds of beats. But we wanted it to rep Miami. So we were fighting for that. And then on the bass side, those guys at that time in that period, they kind of like, they didn't like the hip hop scene because they saw it as a New York thing coming in, as an invasion. But like for myself, I'm originally from LA. He's my boy from my crew. He's from Jersey. Like we weren't from New York per se. We were all building a life in Miami. Our identity was Miami just as anybody else. But we wanted to create an identity for hip hop in Miami. But just real quick. But when we would go to parties, bass is such an important part of our growing up, of our young life, is that you played reggae to dance with the girls, then you went to a hip-hop set, a dope hip-hop set, and then you went back to the bass to dance with the girls. So bass is a part of, you know, our coming of age.
It's almost, it's really funny.
Bass was a coming of my age as well. Well, because I got to school in 96, and I had never really got into it until it was party time.
Where are you from?
New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but then went to Maryland in 96, and in that... That's when you had everybody from other places. So it was some go-go in there, and it was a lot of bass.
And I was going to say, the way you described your relationship with bass was the same way hip-hop kids growing up in D.C. felt about go-go.
Go-go, right.
It wasn't what our passion was,
right.
But you had a crate of Go-Go and you knew you were going to play it. Right, you had to be up on the records, even if it wasn't. And then you developed a certain appreciation. I'm sure you're probably the same way. And then when you go out of town, you have even more of an appreciation when people play Miami music. Even if when you were in Miami, you were like, actually, I'm more like a Mobb Deep kind of guy.
Right,
you know what I mean?
For sure.
But that's just the nature of being a hip hop head.
Yeah, definitely.
So what did you do with the DJing thing? How was it the tapes first that got big for you? What was how did you build the EFN thing?
Well, I started a company called Crazy Hood Productions, and my partner here is a part of the company, and I started it in 93. I mean, incorporated and everything. And
what was the goal of the production?
Had no idea.
Okay.
You know, I'm just like, we're going to do something.
Let's
just don't know what.
I have two
turntables, but I'm not ready yet to release anything. So we tried to do a party, because back then we didn't have hip hop clubs and we didn't have hip hop on mainstream radio. So the only way we got to hear hip hop was like going to reggae jams or someone throwing a house party or a warehouse party. So we threw a party, and then unfortunately that party got shot up.
Mm, you know? It happens.
And the cops came and like, if we ever see this crazy shit, you're fucked. So I was like, all right, back to the drawing board. I mean, we're still going to do a party, but we had to lay low for a little bit. And then I started to feel a little bit more confident with putting out the mixtapes. And what I started doing to try to compete, because they were flooding the market. Our homie Mark Furman, well, he wasn't my homie back then. Hip Hop Connection was the name of the company. He was like the biggest mixtape distributor nationally or internationally.
Huge, huge.
He got raided by the feds and stuff.
Furman from the OJ trial?
Not from different Mark Furman. Yeah, although both had their
unfortunate name, though. But yeah, he was bringing in these mixtapes, and he wasn't really distributing any local guys or myself. So to compete with these mixtapes that had all these exclusives or all these freestyles or whatever, I just started to get in the car and just drive out to buy records. Because I had to get my hands on these white labels or these records as soon as they came out so I can at least semi-compete with these other mixtapes. Because I wanted to give the same quality of mixtape to the consumer in Miami. But instead of you hearing shout out to the Brooklyn and the Bronx, I wanted you to hear shout out to Kendall and Perrine and Homestead and you know, Florida City or whatever. So we would drive. I would drive to Atlanta. We'd go to Jersey. We'd go to New York. Just dig in the crates. Go to Beat Street, whatever. Drive, 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 drive. Come back. Put these mixtapes together. And then I just very consistently was putting these out. And slowly but surely, the name started getting out. And then I would go to
And real quick, the name.
What name?
Your
DJ
name.
EFN?
Yes.
I went from E-Funk, Funk E, horrible names. I said, let me just, my initials of my name.
And Eric, just went straight.
Eric Fernando Narciandi, my.
It just went straight initials.
Straight initials, EFN. But a lot of people unfortunately call me
lazy.
EFN. That's
lazy.
That's not lazy. That's
lazy,
great, man.
Son of a bitch.
Proud of my name.
Nah, that's a good way to do
lazy.
It.
Lazy.
And by the way, EFN, effin. People keep saying, people
effin,
do say
effin,
effin, and I'm like, no, it's EFN, guys. I'm positive.
I have a whole mixtape skit where I diss people say.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Although I guess it's one of those things, by the way, I so relate to you because. We were just talking about this yesterday. Sife, I know you've talked about this a million times with regard to me, and now I so get it. Two nights ago, I was at Kanye, and it only happened. I got recognized all night, and the only time, it happened maybe twice.
Right.
But when people confidently call me Ebro, it's so irritating. Sife, don't you agree? The thing is, if someone says it once in passing, you can just ignore it.
Right.
But Sife, did you always notice, you've told me this, when it annoys you that people call me you, it's when they're Rosenberg, like yelling it at you. So they know, you know, they're talking to you,
right.
But you're saying
right.
the wrong name. So how do I reply to you?
I just been getting right to it.
What do you say?
Like, yo, enough, what up? Cypher, what's up, man?
Happened yesterday, too. So as I've been complaining about on Kanye the first night, went back to Kanye yesterday. And then our other friend Ballard's walking and just hears someone like, yo, is that Ebro? Is that Ebro? Alexa said she was watching it all night. Alexa said she had a real, she never mentions anything about me like interacting with people. But at the Kanye show in particular, because obviously it's like very much our core market, right? So if you go to the Kanye show in New York, we better get recognized because we're the only, you know what I'm saying? It just makes sense.
Right.
So people, she was watching people's, the radio celebrity is a bizarre world that only we occupy.
Mm-hmm.
For example, went to Rye Playland on Friday, which is the, you know, amusement park here. Mm-hmm. Sife, I'd never been to Playland before.
That's crazy. That's my grandmother's special.
Your grandmother loved Playland?
She would take me there all the time, you know. Why'd you go there?
It was me and Alexa's 4-year anniversary. Didn't have anything to do. We'd never been. We like amusement parks. Can you turn the music down?
It's down.
Okay. So we're at Playland, And this is what I, this is how I will explain being a radio celebrity. Ordering food, the same place, the burger spot. I'm about to order, and the girl who's about to take my order is like, are you Rosenberg? And I was like, yes, nice to meet you. And she was like, oh my God. She's so excited. She's like, oh my God, excited. That's sweet. Walk around to pick up the burger. The other girl who's handing me the burger looks at me, looks down at the food, looks at everything. He's like, Rosenberg. Oh, here's your food. Knows who I was, doesn't give a shit. Says it out loud, but with no excitement whatsoever. I'm like, that's the worst.
Which one did you like more?
I liked the first one better. I did. Yeah,
the first is way better.
It's way better. And, but both were better than the guy at the Garden who was straight mean mugging me and calling me Ebro and seemed irritated when I corrected him. I was like, no, it's actually Rosenberg. I was like, Ebro's tall and black. And I'm small and white.
Well, I get tagged anywhere that Nori's in a picture with a Spanish dude.
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, yes. Yo, EFN, I see you. You're like, I'm not.
Like,
I wasn't.
He's Filipino, homie. That's Butch Rock.
All right. You know, by the time, when we get back in 2 seconds, we're going to finish and get more into the details of EFN's story. I want to hear about your relationships with Khaled and everyone else from the Miami scene. But first, Syfe. I got to talk to you about our friends at SeatGeek, because last night, you know how I got in the house? You know how I got tickets to Kanye West, Syfe?
How did you get the tickets?
SeatGeek.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, I know. SeatGeek. You got to download the SeatGeek app. If you ever need to get tickets to an event of any kind, whether it be sports, music, it makes no difference. Go to SeatGeek. Download that app right now. And if you get that SeatGeek app, you go to the settings tab and you click add a promo code. Use the code WANEP and SeatGeek will give you $20 off after you've made your first ticket purchase. So, for example, they just pushed the Beyonce show back to October for MetLife Stadium. Go to SeatGeek. Ooh, Adele, 6 shows at Madison Square Garden. They're sold out.
Ooh.
You know where you need to go? SeatGeek. That's right. Now, Syfe, maybe Chappelle comes back and does more shows. You know where I would get tickets?
I would get them at SeatGeek.
Exactly. So shout out to SeatGeek. Download that app and type in the promo code WANEP today. DJ EFN, not effing.
You guys
all
are professionals.
Yeah, we're like,
we suck at Drink Champs.
Well, that's one of the things that we'll get to the podcast, of course, Drink Champs, which the newest episode is what, Bow Wow?
Bow Wow and Combat Jack and Jack Thriller. We dropped them both yesterday.
Well, hold on. But you had Jack Thriller and Combat Jack together?
Together.
Wow, those are two people with similar names who are not similar personalities
it's
whatsoever.
It's a very interesting show.
Where does that go? Where does Combat Jack and Jack Thriller go?
You need to hear it. It gets a little crazy.
Really?
It
gets weird?
It gets really weird for multiple
reasons.
Here's
the deal with us, EFN. We are professional broadcasters.
That's right.
Yes, I know this.
And you guys are fucking drunks.
Exactly.
Yes, we're drunk amateurs.
You're drunk amateurs. That's the beauty of it, though.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny. Did Combat Jack say to you what he said during our live podcast, which was like, no, like, our podcast is good because it's professional, and yours, it sounds like college radio bullshit, but people like it for some reason.
Well, that's what you guys just did to me right now.
Exactly. And now we're flipping, like, Shots. Ours is really good. Shots. Yours is good if you like that weird drunken bullshit.
I wonder who we're going to say that about next. Exactly. What's the next heroin addicts?
Like, exactly. Now you and Nori. You and Nori are going to be like, yo, these fucking, this Lean Champs podcast is terrible.
Yo, these crack champs.
No, yo, nothing would be more boring than the Lean Champs podcast.
And it would pop, probably.
It would pop.
Yo, pop. Everybody would be drinking lean while they listen.
Fall asleep.
Makes so much sense to them.
Okay, so, and I'm actually jealous that you got to Bow Wow, because every time I see Bow Wow, I'm like, I really want to have you on the podcast. But here's what I'm going to tell you to your
face. Is that real?
Yeah, I've always wanted Bow Wow. And whenever I see him, I'm like, we got to do it, but it never happens. The thing I love about your podcast, and in terms of it, like, because I naturally am, like, competitive and, like, always get irked about other stuff, but yours never irks me at all because, well, A, because Nori's a friend, of course, and I'm proud of him, but also because you guys are so inherently different stylistically.
We're totally different.
Right? Like, we're so nerdy that, like, for example, you could have Bow Wow on your show.
Oh, you mean as a show we're different?
Yes.
Me and Nori are two different people.
Oh, as different people, yes. Yeah. But as a show, it's so different than ours. Like, we could have the same guest the same day as you, and the podcast would actually accompany each other nicely, but it's not, you're not going to get the same podcast.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. So, like, I listened to the KRS-One episode, and, like, I really want to get KRS. Still haven't had him. Saw him recently. Haven't had him. But I'm like, yo, I got amazing stuff from that podcast. Some of it was stuff I would talk about, but a lot of it isn't.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? And so it's like, I like that. I think both subscriptions for Drink Champs and WANEP are great because
they're
like, Well, because there are some, like, I won't lie. Like, I might not want to hear Combat Jack's interview with someone the same day as I heard ours, because we have a sort of, there are similarities to the approach, right?
Right.
Your guys' approach is so in a different
we
space.
We have no approach, really.
Right, it's just getting drunk and having fun.
But, like I heard the, I would never, and I don't, no disrespect to whoever's going to hear this, but I would never think I would be interested in a Core Mega interview.
Right.
And that interview was fucking amazing.
Yeah, it was. Super dope.
It was really, it's like, it's so ill. Like, I never even knew any of that stuff to even want to ask Core Mega those questions. And Nori was there, and you hear it,
yep,
these questions that I wouldn't even know to ask.
And that's the thing. Like, even though Syph is more of an insider than I am, mm-hmm, we're still both just fan outsiders.
Right.
Nori is straight insider.
You're not going to get any better than right, the relationships that Nori has.
No,
with
no, so you're going to get a totally yeah, different thing. Yeah. So, like, I don't get me wrong. For I love doing what I do and what we do, which is right, nerdy, like, fan breakdown.
No, that's awesome.
But
yeah,
Nori's thing, he's able to give you something else. Like, yeah, yeah, I would be limited with where I could go
it's
with Cormega.
It's a different rapport, and he can push the envelope with these artists.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. We've had moments in our podcast so far where, like, we're about to go somewhere, and, like, we're hovering, teetering somewhere. Like, you know what? When you do Nori's podcast, he'll go all the way there, but it's not right, a space that we're going to go, that I'm comfortable in. Right. But Nori can occupy that space, yeah, right? So you were just saying you guys are different. How are you and Nori different?
I mean, just listen to the podcast. I mean, he just goes ham with what he's doing, and I'm trying to, like, bring, kind of balance it out, and sometimes, you know, maybe I'll listen to what the fans are saying. If he's cutting people off, we'll try to tame that a little bit, or I'm bringing, maybe sometimes I'll ask certain questions that I know Nori's not going to ask, and just in general, I'm trying to bring sanity to the show to a degree. But once I go down the liquor path too, it's like, you know, we both go to hell, you know what
right,
I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
so you try your best to hold on.
I think there's been times where Nori's told me, oh shit, he's going downhill here.
He's like, slow down, yeah, Bob, yeah, slow.
So let's talk about meeting Nori and other Miami okay, artists. How did you, who were the first artists that you started building relationships with in Miami, and how'd that happen?
Miami artists or artists?
No, in general, in Miami. Or in general, period. Doesn't have to be in Miami. I'm right, just guessing that's where
well,
you were.
I think I mentioned I started going to, because I knew, you know, when I said took, you know, wanted to do this whole music thing, coming from where we come from in South Miami, we have no connects. You know, people were looking at me crazy, like, you're really going to try to do this as a career? Like, you don't know nobody. So the only thing that I saw that I could do is start to go to these hip-hop conferences, these music conferences, like Jack the Rapper or How Can I Be Down, stuff like that. How Can I Be Down was in Miami, so that was easier for me. So I started going there, and we were like a crew, crazy hoods, like at that time, like 15, 20 dudes, you know, and we would just rush, you know, go to these conferences all wearing crazy hood shirts. And, you know, I'm here looking at the blueprint of like a Wu-Tang
creating a presence,
or Def Squad, or, you know, things like that. So we wanted to create that for Miami. So we were going, yeah, even No Limit. So we were going to these conferences. We created a presence. We wanted people to know you're in our hometown. And I am a DJ that you need to know in this hometown if you want to break into this market. And since the radio wasn't playing it yet, mainstream, you had to utilize someone like me to get your music out. So whether it was building a rapport with artists, managers, or label execs, they all were dealing with me. And I was also doing pirate radio and college radio, although I wasn't at college, but I was doing the WVUM, the UM station.
Of course.
Yeah.
So. And for the record, people who never have been involved in college radio, there are always people involved in college radio who are not
there,
from the college. That's like part of...
Kind of deboed our way into that.
Yeah, were you the... Did you host a show, or you just mixed for someone else's show?
Co-host and spun, yeah. I was
and did the other dude go to college, or did no
yeah,
one?
Yeah, yeah, the people, like three different people that we were there for a couple years. And we would just be like, hey, I'm going to be the DJ and bring my turntables.
Oh, and you're like, hey, I'm willing to bring my turntables,
yeah,
so let's go.
I mean, it was cool. We didn't, you know.
Right,
you didn't,
right. But you're right, 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 of yeah, course. Yeah. But they were happy to have you.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure.
Talk about the, let's talk about the bringing turntables to a radio show.
And records.
And records.
Records to clubs back then.
Right, I mean, but when bringing, what would someone have to do, like, for my regular job at this point to be bringing turntables and records to a club?
Crazy.
I can't imagine what my price would be if I was like, every time I come out, I need to bring my records
and
my
turntables. Well, you had to pay for a crew also.
Right.
That was initially why you had that crew.
Was just to carry stuff.
Carry, protection,
right,
of the equipment, you know.
Such a pain in the ass. And not to mention, if turntable cases are like the one case that makes the item you're carrying 50 times heavier than it actually
and
is.
And dangerous.
Yeah, and oh my God. Don't let someone knock into
it. Break shit or drops on your foot or whatever the fuck.
Those cases, Saif, yeah, they're a nightmare.
Yo, I know the long ones too, because I used to have this one crate.
Oh, the coffin?
The coffins.
The reggae crate.
That. Yep.
That was everybody, like whoever was new had to carry that one.
Oh, you mean the long record crate, the longer record crate.
I had both. Yeah, it was like and the long record crate.
Oh.
It was like the size of a crate, like a crate and a half.
Made out of like cedar wood.
Heavy as fuck.
Well, it's funny. I'm looking for, I'm trying to come up with good ways to store my 45s because right now they're in these shitty, I mean, shout out to Bags Unlimited. They do a nice website. I don't know them at all. They sell like boxes, right? But they're just cardboard boxes. They look like shit. Like they just have no, and now that I'm in my, we bought a place as my new home, I want to have the records look good while they're sitting
custom
there.
Box.
So I've been going on Etsy and like looking at what people do on there, and they have some dope wooden 45 cases.
Damn, I need that.
But I look at them and I'm like, I said to Alexa, she was like, oh, get these are really nice. And I'm like, totally, and I probably will get these, but they look so nice as cases that they will ruin how light 45s are, because a crate of them will now be almost like a crate of records. You know what I'm saying? If the wood's that nice, instantly, my favorite thing about 45 is how light they are.
Yep.
So what I really wanted to find was
but what you mean, you want to take the crates out?
No, just like
if you use them to transport?
Like just within your the room.
Just within
itself.
My own house, but like when I use them then, you know, because I take out my records. I like to go through, or if when we move again, what I really want to find but can't, what I think would be really cute and would look good and be dope and different would be if someone sold mini 45 milk crates. Like I would do that. Like I would love to have little.
Yeah, that'd be dope.
That'd
if
be
someone,
dope.
Because that would actually look good and be kind of cheap if someone just did it.
Yeah, I feel like
why are you making
before?
A face there?
It's
Darryl.
Done. No, because it's done now.
Yeah, someone's doing it.
You think someone's
doing it? If they once they hear this?
Yeah.
Oh, so someone, if you could somehow make a mini 45 milk crate that would hold like 145s in a crate and just look like a classic milk crate, that shit would
be
so
dope.
I don't need a wooden box. Like, I'll do it, but I just don't necessarily need that. Sorry, that was a PSA for my life. All right, so we still didn't get to how. So
artists.
You're doing pirate radio. So now so you become an outlet for artists to a certain extent.
So I'm meeting artists. Like we met Pun, we met Biggie, we met Puff back then. We met everybody.
How would you meet them exactly? How'd you meet Pun? What was the Pun experience?
I'm saying you're in the conference and these people are roaming around and it was like a we're 18 years old, 19.
You
want to
give your man a microphone, by the way, just in case you can ad lib and introduce yourself properly.
And my goddaughter's here, by the way, his daughter. My goddaughter, DJ.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
Paul, Saif, why are you cutting off Paul?
No, sorry to cut you off, Paul. I got to run out because I'm about to go perform.
Wait, hold on, Paul. Hold on, Paul.
Oh, he doesn't have headphones. Yeah
you don't have, Paul, he doesn't have headphones. Saif, you have to leave now?
Yeah, I got to leave and go perform with Dave Chappelle.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So, Jesus.
Yeah. So listen, it was nice talking to you guys.
Hey,
nice hearing
your
story.
Man.
I won't hear the rest because I've never listened to a Juan app.
I'll fill you in next time I see you.
Hey, and shout out to our brother Kether, man.
Blessings.
Yeah, shout out to our brother Kether. That's right. Kether.
That's my family right there.
Saif Kether from Monster is the reason that EFN is here.
Yeah, that's my brother.
Oh,
my
Kether, that's
partner,
my dog, yo. I love that guy.
Well, now that you said he's his brother and you said he's your dog, I just call him a friend. But I feel kind of understated. All right, Saif,
I see y'all later.
Tell Chappelle to do one app. Bye.
Peace.
Sorry, Paul. Go ahead. So you've been itching to say something that he's been leaving out. Go ahead.
For me, I mean, it's important to say that we were young. You know, we didn't have the outlet, like he said. We didn't have no connection. We didn't have anybody showing us what to do. There was nothing going on. We actually planted seeds and saw and watered it ourselves, and we grew to these conferences. And to be at 18, 19, underage, but being in the mix and putting ourselves there is important. You know, mm-hmm. I wanted to say that.
Yes,
so you don't know. Basically, what he was along with saying is, we don't know, and I can speak for myself also. We didn't know what the fuck we were doing.
No, we didn't.
Kind of making it
sometimes
up.
Sometimes we still don't know what the fuck.
Well, of course,
doing, you know,
but back then it was, like I said, particularly interesting because there was no visual blueprint
at all.
No social
Except
media blueprint.
Other artists and other people. Like I'm here avidly reading the source and looking at all these other crews, and even like Luke in my own city, seeing how he was an entrepreneur and what they were doing grassroots wise, and I'm like, okay, I can kind of emulate. I see
we can do this.
What's going on, like the things I can identify that I can possibly do, you know, and that's what I do. And one of the things that we became great at was promotions, that we started to get hired.
Who was your biggest influence promotion wise? Like whose game in Miami do you see like, yo, their promo game is everywhere?
Well, not in Miami, just in general promotions. Like, I mean, like he mentioned No Limit, seeing them, like just like
everywhere,
Army Deep, you know, seeing Wu-Tang, the way they branded. Luke, just how he did his company and how he was an entrepreneur, like just taking a little bit from everybody. And then I was just like, we don't have money per se to do certain things, but we can go out into the streets and brand ourselves. We can slap stickers, snipe, wear t-shirts, go up in people's faces, 20 motherfuckers wearing t-shirts. They gonna see who we are, whether they like us or not. My whole motto is like, they don't have to like us. They don't have to think we're good. I just want them to know us right now. And that was the whole point of that early stages for us.
Do you remember at these conferences walking up on people? Remind me of a few stories. Which memorable walk-ups on artists do you remember from when?
No, this is what I wanted to say. It was hip-hop was in such a youthful time that
everyone is artists at those
was, and they were excited to be recognized because people weren't necessarily like they'd come to Miami and they didn't think that people knew them in Miami. You know, so when you walk up to them, be like, yo, like I'll give you one. Exhibit had just Paparazzi out. You know, and just on vinyl, I think, at the time. So that it's only played on certain mix shows and mixtapes. He comes to Miami for one of the conferences. He's in, I think, sitting in the lobby of a hotel by himself.
Yeah.
And I tell these dudes, really, it's not like we saw enough of him to know, like, that's Exhibit. But I just had, like, the sixth sense when it came to ours. I'm like, I think that's Exhibit. You know what I'm saying? And then we're like, let's get, hey, yo, Exhibit, blah, 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 whatever. Kicked it. He was hyped. Like, yo! Bought some liquor. He said he had a show deep in the city of Miami. He didn't know how to get there in Wynwood. And then we took him. He jumped in the back of my Pathfinder in the back part because my boys were in the other seats. Drank his fifth, took him to the show, and we got him to the show. And that was memorable as hell for us, you know, at that age, you know. And that's such a classic record.
Oh,
and his
man.
DJ. I was more geeked to meet the DJ that made that record. That was with him.
What was his name?
I forget his name, man. But he told me that he's the one who produced that. And I was like, yo. I'm talking to him the whole time, not even Exhibit, you know?
People also forget, you know, and this is something that's true in almost all businesses of entertainment, like definitely true in wrestling as well. I find it when I'm in that world.
Right.
Is that like being a bit of, it's hard, right? Because everyone wants to be on and be popping, but so many of us who really are into it at some point kind of play the role of fanboy too. And
course,
that's how you meet
course,
people, right?
Yeah.
Like you might even get played. You might even have a situation where you get played where you're just a fanboy of an artist. You help them out. They turn out to kind of be dicks. Some might be, and I haven't necessarily had that experience, but I've seen it. I've watched other people be like, they're kind of, I'm getting people weed, doing whatever they could do to find a reason to be around. And of course, it's all about that person's like individual hustle and style that lets them either become a colleague with someone where they show you great respect or they just treat you like a bitch who will get you some weed. Right.
Yeah, I think I always was like, I was definitely a fanboy and appreciate all these dudes, but I always made sure that people respected me and my crew.
Right, like you let them know, like, we do something.
Like
we have love for you.
Yeah, no, don't disrespect us as a fan, as a groupie or anything like that, because that's not the level.
Nah, you let people know that you guys bring something to the table. And
Yeah.
Okay,
respect was number one for me.
I'd say everyone says respect number one. I got respect like number three, number four. But all right, Paparazzi is a song by Exhibit. It was the lead single of At the Speed of Life. Okay, the song samples Barbara Streisand, which I did not know.
Yeah. That sample was used in a couple of records. Too.
Producer Tayod Aussar, Tayod Aussar, does not have a Wikipedia page himself.
And that was his DJ name?
I don't remember. Yeah. He was the one DJing for him. He's on his promo tour. He's on his promo tour with just that single out and the B-side. I forgot if there was something on that B-side.
Nah, the loud that promo was the instrumental, you know, Radio Dirty, instrumental acapella.
But that, you know, back then you could put out a single like that and it's like in the streets, you're hot. So he was on his promo tour and then he told me that this is the guy DJing for me. I forgot if he had a DJ name or not, but he produced Paparazzi. I was like,
yeah, and I'm sure, yeah. Listen, I'm yeah. sure at the time.
That record is bananas.
I'm sure at the time that Exhibit put out Paparazzi, the idea of being recognized in Miami was absolutely a big deal.
What year is that? 95?
95.
Tell you this, though, when this joint, in just because we're mentioning it, 98. I bring this up, I think, every year on this podcast.
This is a crazy record. The video.
This is genius.
That video is crazy. What you see is what you get.
Exhibit has. I'm going to go ahead and wait for it. Call Exhibit underrated.
Yeah, definitely. Especially from that time. Period. What you see is what you get now. And the whole Licks Alcoholics crew.
Well, yeah, in
original
general.
Original Drink Champs.
Original Drink Champs.
Yeah. King T. Shout out to King T.
Shout out to King T, indeed.
Paved the way for them.
Anyways, so that was just one example. Do you remember? I just, because I love to ask stories, do you remember running up on Pun?
I mean, I didn't run up on him. We just went up to him. It's just the way you put it sounded, you know.
Like, I don't think we would have done
nah,
that.
No, I mean, we were just going up to people, and I'm like,
were you
yo,
getting drops from
drops,
people ever?
Drops yeah. on cassette tape of course. Joints, you know, like.
Still got them? You have on computer now?
I have everything. I'm a hoarder. I have everything, man.
Cassette and do you, have you digitized?
I haven't digitized everything, but I have cassettes. I have an original digital 4-track where I got all my first freestyles as well.
Who do you have any good original freestyles?
Ton. I know. I have tons. Yeah. I have De La Soul. I have people from The Woo. I have the Beatnuts. I have, obviously, I have a million from Nori and CNN because that was really one of the first national artists that really started working with me. I mean, I have a ton of stuff, man. I forget. Like, I have bad memory, too.
So then...
I drink. Yeah. Bacardi no, brain, we call it.
Drink champs.
Drunk facts. That's why we say drunk facts. We're off by a year or two.
Right. So they're facts. They're facts adjacent.
They're facts, but there's something wrong with the fact. know, so excuse us.
And so where did it go from you for there? From there?
Well, imagine. So being a Miami DJ and now just having those drops, and now the local heads are like, yo, EFN got, you know, Pun, EFN got Biggie, EFN got... We had drops from everybody.
You have a Biggie drop?
Excuse me?
You have a Biggie
yeah,
drop?
Yeah, I have a Biggie drop.
What does he say on it?
I don't know. DJ EFN, baby, baby. I don't know what he says. I forgot.
Come on, man.
You remember?
I don't remember.
No, I have. I mean, I'll find it for you if you want, Paul, and I'll send it to you.
I would like that. I want to hear the Biggie. The only person I ever knew with a Biggie drop was...
You didn't have one?
Nah, I never met Biggie.
No, you... 97,
I missed
you,
it.
Yeah, I remember even Puff had a cast on that day. I remember that.
He probably fought someone. DJ Book, my boy DJ Book had a Biggie drop. But like, I really don't know. There aren't a ton.
Yeah, I have. I definitely have it.
Ever meet Pac?
No, that's the one person I never got to meet.
Never met Pac?
No.
Did you see Eminem in any of the early days?
Yes, when he was touring with the Outsiders.
Wow. Came
yeah. He came after his the show at Cameo. He came over to a club that we were working at with Paul. And
with Paul Rosenberg?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I remember, I don't know if they kind of like didn't want to let him in at first. I don't know. We were there. And that I don't know if we helped, but we met him right there. And then shout out to my boy Scam, who worked on his artwork on Slim Shady OP. That's our friend from Miami, works on a lot of art. He did the Drink Chaps logo.
Designed that, which is a dope logo,
yeah,
by the way.
Scam too. So, and he did Beats Rhyme and Life for Tribe Called Quest as well.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. Scam has, you should get him on here. He'd be really amazing.
And did a lot of stuff, huh?
A lot of stuff. And he did the song with M.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no. Scam is a very interesting dude.
Okay, so obviously there's a lot of years between you doing all this and and the podcast now, which so many... And it must be a weird feeling to have so many people now in other worlds recognize you for this one thing that you've done.
Right. It is awkward because we do a lot of things. We still do other things that we're proud of. And then, yeah, for people to be like, congratulations on one thing. Well, no, congratulate me on everything.
My
God damn
career.
It.
No, my career.
Like, we're very proud of, we have this series called Coming Home, which we can talk about or not, but where we explore hip hop in other countries.
That's dope. Yeah. And how did you come up with that? And first of all, yeah, the idea is it's a DVD where you, like the one that you brought with you today,
right?
Haiti, Peru,
Cuba.
And
we're about to come out with Vietnam.
Exploring hip hop in those places. How do you do that?
Well, it started as an idea that had nothing to do really with hip hop. I'm Cuban American, never been to Cuba. If people know there's like that struggle between Cubans in America and Cubans in Cuba, they don't want you to like go back and forth. It's like taboo, especially in 2012 when I decided to go. If you're raised here, your family's always like, you can't go back to Cuba. You'd be helping Castro, or you're going to get killed, or they're going to put you in prison. So I decided, fuck it, I want to go, and I want to go before
it changes
while it's in its bubble. And one of my other homies that's in our crew, he's an MC, and he's also a filmmaker, Garcia. He's Cuban-American. I said, let's go, and let's film this at least for ourselves. You know, we're like first-time filmmakers doing this, and not even thinking it as filmmakers, just documenting the trip for ourselves, for our families, for our friends. So when we go, I met a homie, my boy Eric. He works with a lot of artists, hip-hop artists in Cuba. So I'm like, let's meet these artists while we're there, see how they do hip-hop. So we filmed the whole event. We come back, we put together this amateur film, and we start screening it, and people loved it. And eventually it got into the hands, shout out to my boy Ramon Dukes, to Revolt, which was just launching in 2013. And we were one of their first original acquisitions like that they aired on Revolt. And then while we're showing this film in screenings or little festivals, we started getting feedback from people saying, you know, I'm not Cuban, but you're inspiring me to want to go to my family's roots and to the country of origin and all this. And then all I could think about is I love the concept of Anthony Bourdain and all this stuff. I was like, why can't we go back to these countries or to these countries on behalf of the hip hop community and explore how hip hop is being done there. And that's where the idea came from. And then the only reason it's coming home is because of the first one was me coming home to Cuba. So we kept that. And then I added a tagline, wherever we find hip hop, we find home.
Well done.
So
that's, I see what you did there.
Yeah.
See what you did there. And, and guess what? I like that.
Thank you.
So how many are there total have you done?
We're about to release our fourth one, Coming Home Vietnam. And then that Coming Home is mine again because my father fought in the Vietnam War. He's a Marine veteran. And I went to the base where he fought Khe San. And I kind of like have that as a part of the subject matter, you know, going on behalf of the children of veterans and just kind of seeing, you know, adding that to the film.
Wow, that's very, very cool. Where can people get the DVD? Can they get it?
Crazyhood.com.
Crazyhood.com, yeah. Still.
And we're going to make Blu-rays now. DVDs are played out now.
Yeah, I know. It's a wrap.
Or USBs, I don't know.
I will say, another really cool thing I think about the podcast you're doing is I don't know, I always consider myself like a local hip-hop guy to a market. Like, I always think of myself still, even though I've been in New York 10 years, as like a DC hip-hop guy who was always doing college radio and hustling and being involved and meeting artists when they came to town and doing the whole thing. So I love seeing someone else from another market who is doing that same thing get their due.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So even though, yeah, you've done a lot of other things and
I get it.
Only some people will appreciate those things. The fact that you have a thing, one of your contributions to hip-hop is being appreciated on a broad scale.
Right.
Is very cool. Now talk about having to deal with Nori 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Well, real quick, to your point that you just said.
Yes, please.
I really feel like on the show, on Dream Chance specifically, I rep for all those DJs in all those other markets that have done so much for these artists and don't get their due.
Yeah.
You know, I am that guy. I am the voice for those guys, you know, because we've done so much to prop up all these artists. And now, you know, because technology has changed, times have changed, these DJs are kind of like seen as obsolete.
Yeah,
but they're a part of these people's careers.
People really don't get it. Like how, and we're talking about like how many markets there are. Yeah, and from my side, it was radio mostly. But there's the club side. There was
club,
the
mixtape radio. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, there was these record pools. There was all these things.
I had a record pool as well.
Of course you did. I could. By the way, if I had to guess, did you have a record pool or not? I would have said yes. You had a record pool, 100%. So Nori is a wonderful person.
Oh, one of, that's my brother, man.
One of my favorite people in music. Mm-hmm. And one of the people I consider a friend. Like, to the point, you know, there are only some... Really, a friend is someone who you've had ups and downs with. And Nori and I have had ups and downs, ebbs and flows in our relationship.
From behind the scenes.
I'm sure, of course you do. But I always had a strong affection and appreciation for Nori. That said, he's a pain in the ass and a crazy person at times as well, I'm sure.
That's part of the allure to Nori.
Right, he's ADD as fuck.
Yeah.
He gets really excited about things. He's so sincere. That's what makes him a great artist.
Authentic.
He's authentic.
Yeah.
But, you know, that can be a challenging thing as the, you are the backbone of the operation.
Right.
So what are the challenges? What are the easiest things and the most challenging things about making Drink Champs happen week to week with Nori?
The sporadicness of our schedule. Drink Champs has no organized schedule.
And neither does Juan Epstein, believe me. I know what that's like. It's not, and it doesn't make it easier. I got news for you.
Like this quickly was supposed to be a side, like from a side hustle became a full time. That's how overwhelming it has become. And yeah, I mean, that's the challenge for me in general. I mean, I'm sure it's a challenge for Nori, but he, I think he embraces it more than I do. You know, he's down for whatever, whenever. Sometimes I'm not necessarily down for whatever, whenever.
What's your family situation?
Single man, girlfriend, but still, I do a lot of things, and I have other family, and you know, I...
Right, of course. And you were already, had other things that you
are very involved in. Yeah, company, a promotion company, consulting, I do a lot of things.
Do you still DJ out much?
Not much, no.
Not much. Do you consider yourself still, do you consider yourself an active DJ still?
No, but I'm getting, I lost my inspiration. I lost, definitely lost my inspiration for making mixtapes. I feel mixtapes don't exist anymore. At least as we know them.
The word mixtape has a different meaning now.
Right, yeah. And then DJing, I come from an era that the DJ dictated what you heard and your mood.
Was a tastemaker.
Right, and if we played a record that you never heard, you were going to, and probably like if you respected the DJ, you were going to go with him wherever he took you. DJs can't do that as often anymore, if they even can at all.
Well, it's funny. I mean, everyone does it for themselves, right? Like, everyone's deal is that they find what they want online, And then it's like your job is just to play the song they already like.
Right.
Which, you know, listen, there's some benefits to that as a DJ. Sometimes it's easy. You get to a club and songs started popping yesterday on SoundCloud and it's already a hit when you play it when you're out.
Right.
But the downside is, yeah, it's harder to take people on a, yeah, on
this
a journey.
This is just my personal reason why I don't do it. I don't down anybody for doing what they do.
It's How's just, your vinyl collection? Did you keep everything?
I got like 20,000. And I had more, but some hurricanes and floods ruined it. Ruined my records. And I still have some of those records that I just couldn't get rid of that are all fucked up in my crates because of water damage.
But how organized is your shit? Like, do you keep your shit together or is it all over the place?
No, because of some recent moves in the past couple of years, it's not organized. It looks organized, but I know it's not organized. Like, I know I have a record that I want, and I'm like looking at the piles.
And you're like, fuck!
And I'm like, I could never find this record. I've been trying to get the white label LALA forever. That I know I have it. I have it. I put it on a mixtape. Probably the first person to put it on a mixtape in Miami. And I can't even try to tackle my collection to find it.
I actually have that. I have that in my... I got a copy of that recently again.
The one that's the original Dog mm-hmm. Pound beat, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I have the... I think Syfe gave me another copy of it that I have in like my close-to-me crates. Because that was one that I couldn't find too.
Right.
How many... Have you asked Nori how many they pressed of that?
No, that's a good question. I don't know if he'd know. That'd probably be a good question for...
Should we call him?
Call him.
Let's ask before. We got to wrap up here in a minute. Let's call Nori and ask him right now.
Yeah.
I also want to make him feel jealous for not being here.
And let's talk about how I met Nori so we could...
Oh, yeah. Please set us up with that on the way.
You ready right now?
Yeah, go ahead.
So Nori came down on the promo tour for CNN when Pone got locked up.
Okay. 97?
97. Early 97. And my homie, Phil the Mayor, who now they do live on Sundays and these dudes. Yeah,
yeah.
Back in those days, you know, like we didn't have the radio popping, so they had to take the artist that was going to perform at any club on a tour of like record stores or whatever. I had a hip hop clothing store called Crazy Goods.
Wait, hold on one second. Nori?
Hello?
Nori?
Yo?
Hey, what's happening? It's Rosenberg.
What's going on? How you doing?
I'm doing the Wannette podcast with my special guest, DJ EFN.
Oh, wow.
Yo.
Oh, man.
You like that?
I really like that. That's what's up.
Man. All right, we have one question that just came up, and you are the only one who might know the answer. Although I'm guessing, even if he says that he knows the answer again,
right.
It's a drunk fact.
Right.
Like I'll believe it somewhat.
Yeah.
How many copies of the white label of LALA did y'all press up?
I have no idea.
Thank you.
I think Gino might know, right? Or Martin might know. Martin might.
Nah, Martin. To be 100% honest with you, the honest answer to that question is that is a tragedy, Gaddafi,
Stretch Armstrong.
You're right.
Stretch Armstrong.
This is pre-Martin, pre-Gino. Yeah.
The only people, because rumor has it that it was Trage's idea to press up the white label, but it was actually Stretch Armstrong's parents' money.
Wow.
So Armstrong. Stretch didn't even have it. It was Stretch Armstrong's parents. That's what rumor has his parents' money. So in a weird way, Capone and Noriega got put on by old white people.
That's not weird. Isn't that the music industry?
In the weirdest way. Word. You
that
know what I mean?
The music industry.
Word. Yep.
That was when Nori called Stretch an albino ostrich.
Albino ostrich. That's our brother. The albino ostrich. Man.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, Nori. Yeah. I just wanted to check in. You had to at least have your voice on this for a minute.
Absolutely. All right. One love, y'all.
Later. Absolutely.
Make some noise for Nori.
Make some noise for Nori. Wait, so keep going with the Nori story.
So, yeah, so we met on that promo tour. He came to my store to promote that party that he was doing, and he came in, and I had my digital 4-track. I think I just recently bought it. Yeah. And I was like, microphone's like, yo, I do mixtapes. Here, can you drop a freestyle for me? Boom. He did like two, I think, that day. And we just hit it off. We just, I don't know if it was the Latino thing from him, but we hit it off. And then I was the first person to bring him, or we, as Crazy Hood, were the first people to bring him to do his first solo show in Miami.
Wow.
In ORE. And then they hired me to organize Capone's first show out of prison, the Capone Home Show in Miami. So we just stayed in contact. And then whenever he came to Miami, he dropped freestyles for me. And then whenever I was in New York, you know, I came through his studio and we worked on stuff. And I was his voice in Miami, and he would advocate for me. You know, I'll get people hit me up that he was on Hot 97 shouting me out. And that's how. And because of him, I have to give him the credit, because he was at his height. You know, I was able to get other people to start doing more of those freestyles and more, you know, giving me more tracks like that. And then the mixtape just took off from there.
And now here we are in 2016.
And then he moved after the reggaeton movement. I never liked the reggaeton.
Well, of course.
And he knew that. And after the reggaeton movement, he moved to Miami, and we had a conversation. He's like, yo, E, I know you didn't care for that. Let's work on some hip-hop. And we started. We did the first record we did together when he moved to Miami was where he did a joint over the D-Nice, My Name is D-Nice beat.
What's called?
My Name is N-O.
My Name.
Yeah. And that was the first thing we did. I said, if we're going to make a hip-hop comeback, it's got to be a classic hip-hop beat. And I actually think it was his idea, that specific beat, which that's one of my favorite tracks. And
yeah, that's classic.
We set it off with that, and then he kind of made a resurgence from then, and here we are today, you know, years later, and we did the Sirius XM, which was called Militainment Crazy Raw Radio. We did that for 3 years on XM, then on Sirius XM. We were on 66 Raw. Shout out to Leo G.
What up, Leo G?
Yeah, he put us down. He saw something in that as well. And then we were on Backspin and Hip Hop Nation. And then Nori started touring again with CNN. They did the Channel Live album. I mean, Channel 10.
Yeah.
Channel 10 album, which I think I was the A&R executive producer. And then I had been telling him about podcasting for a while. He didn't know much about what podcasting was. And then he did, I'm kind of fast forwarding everything, but he did Tech Stone. And for about 2 years now, I've been trying to do this podcasting with him. And then once he did Tax, he's like, okay, I could see myself doing it now. And I mean, I always knew he was a natural at it, you know, his personality and the chemistry and with the artists and all that. And then Drink Champs was born.
And here we are.
And we got to shout out my homie Godfrey from Gamertag Radio, who's the one that brought us over to CBS to Play.it.
Yeah, I think this is a really great thing for the genre. Like I said, my only bitterness that I had, I told Nori this, was that I just hadn't thought of, like, and it's not to say I hadn't thought of it, because I definitely had. I knew how good a host he would be, but then I didn't follow up. And I know that Nori trusts me enough that I've been like, hey, I want to do this. He would have been open.
Right.
And I just, you know, classic me. I had my hands in 1,000 things and did not do that.
Right, right.
But God bless CBS for getting it done. You know what I'm saying? I would have had a terrible deal structure anyway.
Well, God bless us too. Everything's pretty in-house. I mean, I'm thankful for them and their
structure. No, God bless for them for coming up,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, for stepping up for sure. But
not stepping up. Oh. Coming up.
Oh, coming
they
up.
Came
yeah,
up.
Yeah. Oh,
they
yeah,
came they up. They came up because okay. What? Making it happen.
Yeah.
Because now they have a machine that runs by itself and they get some
the
nice
team
money.
Over there, they're on point and they're really... They're on the ball for sure. You know, they're making things happen now. But I also want to give a shout out to Combat Jack and his loudspeakers. They were 2 years ago. They were trying to make it happen with us as well.
Yeah, which is a good thought by them as well.
Yeah.
Instead, I worked with Joe Budden, and that blew up in my face. That didn't work out. I mean, it's working out for Joe, but
right.
Me and Joe, not on them.
So what? He's under your.
Oh well, technically, I believe he still is. But we're not exactly on speaking terms. We're not on not speaking terms. We've texted. But I don't.
But
see
his
this.
Podcast is doing well.
Oh yes,
it I think that's amazing well. As well as it does, and it's just him and you know what, he has some co-hosts.
Yes, well it was him. he had some co-hosts,
and like I mean, he doesn't have guests often, so it's pretty well it does.
Yeah, no. Joe's thing is a different animal altogether,
yeah, yeah.
And that's another. I knew that Joe would be great because he had the years where he was on Hot 97 as a host, and Joe's a natural born radio host for a lot of reasons.
Wow.
Yeah, Joe did mornings here.
Oh, I didn't know that
for a year.
I had no idea. This is before Pump It Up and all that. I'm assuming.
Nope. After Pump It
After.
Up. Yep.
Oh, wow.
It was like a year after Pump It Up, and he was like between album cycles and had, I guess, become a regular and a friend of the station, kind of.
Right.
And so he ended up filling in, and then they ended up having him do it. And the reason, ultimately, he couldn't do it because just schedule-wise, doing mornings is such an animal. Trying to be a rap artist and do mornings is not a reasonable thing. But right. He always had that gift. Yeah, Joe's incredibly, incredibly talented. Some people, you know, you should be friends with. And some people you should work with.
Right.
And sometimes the combination is not the move. But his podcast is great. He's going a different direction now, and Marissa Mendez no longer there. Though her new podcast, I've been told.
Oh, she's got one too?
Marissa Explains It All is coming soon. She's doing her own podcast. Yeah, because she developed her own little thing on that show. She played a nice little role.
Most definitely.
And then it kind of fell apart, which is probably my fault. Anyways, hey, DJ EFN. It has been a pleasure, sir.
Oh, one more thing.
You have another shout out?
I do.
I knew it was going to be another shout out.
This is hip hop. This is hip hop.
You got to get these shout outs.
I'm also a manager, and I manage Mayday, signed to Tech N9ne's label Strange Music, and they're about to hit the road. Space Cadet Tour, so look out for Mayday, please.
So
we had a gold record. We got our first gold record with Fragile, which is Tech's record produced by Mayday with Kendrick Lamar.
Of course, I have the Fragile vinyl. It's a great song.
Congratulations to Mayday and us as well.
Yeah, you just did you just congratulate yourself?
Yeah, man, I'm part of management. Yeah, I had to. If you don't congratulate, Paul, who will?
Congratulations.
Who will? You got to give yourself a little accolade.
Hey, listen, congratulations, man. Congratulations. And I want to congratulate myself for having you on this podcast.
I'd drink with you if we had liquor.
I know these bottles are empty,
but trust me, whenever I don't have to drink, I probably should not drink.
So I will. Nori and I have discussed this. The next time I'm in Miami, I don't know when that is, okay, but I definitely want. I've
You're
never.
Welcome.
I've definitely never done a drunken interview, so God knows
you have
how
to
that
drink
could
with
go.
Us.
I will.
You have to. Okay.
I'm not going to get. I'll always stay within reason.
We're not
but I'll
bully you into drinking.
Right. I'm not, well, I mean, Nori has. I have drank Tiger Bone before because of Nori. So.
Nah, but no, that's not really liquor. That's
no. That's just a weird.
It's an elixir for sex.
Yeah, which is weird that Nori gave that to me. Anyway,
slipped that to you.
That's neither here nor there. Hey, Quartermain, thanks for hanging out.
No problem. Yeah, I ain't doing
nothing. No, not really. But yeah. it was still always fun.
It's
just
fun.
To, always to see your light denim jacket. You know what I'm saying? In the building, have you here? Bring that energy.
That's what we do.
Paul, pleasure, man.
Hey, thank you.
Do you have any shout outs you want to give? Because EFN's already given a lot. I don't
crazyhood.com.
Yeah, crazyhood.com.
Now, damn, he controls there. Your shout outs too. What the hell's going on out
shout
here?
Out, can shout out the heckler. Also,
he's gonna
the love, the family.
All right, Miami, you know, what up? Nori, peace. One app. Catch y'all next time.
Peace. Thank you.
Easy.